We're about to have a conversation with Doug Colbert, of course, professor of law at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law, who's been on the show many times, and especially during these trials around the death of Freddie Gray, the officers who were accused of being implicated in the death of Freddie Gray. And Doug, as usual, has been covering these trials and been there watching them all day, every day.
Long days, Mark.
Long days. So, Doug, so the first 2 days of the trial, Thursday and Friday. Give us a sense of what happened. And tell us first about, let's start with the opening statements. What were your thoughts about what the prosecution and the defense laid out?
Well, there are two different narratives that are being presented. And it's interesting that the prosecution wants to believe or wants the judge to conclude that the arrest of Freddie Gray was unlawful, was done without probable cause, without reasonable suspicion to put him on the ground and handcuff him. And so usually you get the defense that's going to be arguing that there's no probable cause. But here the prosecution's doing it with the idea that if the arrest was unlawful, then everything that followed might place the officers in criminal liability, meaning that if Freddie Gray was assaulted or if there was any unconsented touching by Officer Nero, then that could constitute the assault charge. The other two charges, of course, are what happened, what did the police do or fail to do to provide care and protection for Freddie Gray once they took him into custody. So the other charge is a reckless endangerment charge that would have taken place in the van, and the third charge is one of misconduct.
But what is it the judge did not allow to come into the court that makes it difficult to prove some of these things? Isn't something?
Well, today on Friday, Brandon Ross testified. Now he's was one of Freddie Gray's best friends, and he and Freddie Gray and a third person were standing together on a Sunday morning around 8:30 in the morning. Very quiet, hardly anybody was outside. Brandon Ross testified that the three of them went to get some coffee. The judge allowed the video to show what happened once the police took Freddie Gray into custody, but the judge prohibited the sound, the audio, from taking place.
The screaming of Freddie Gray.
The screaming by Freddie Gray, which would have alerted the officer, or arguably would have told the officer that Freddie Gray was injured and that he certainly needed to be restrained with seatbelts.
Let me just ask a quick question. So why do you think he did that? I mean, in Nero's trial, in Porter's trial, they showed that with Freddie Gray screaming. So what was the difference?
Well, the difference is that Officer Nero is not being charged with any of the homicide crimes that that Officer Porter was charged with the manslaughter. And so, therefore, the defense was able to argue that the actual killing or the death of Freddie Gray is something that need not come in. And so, therefore, all the yelling that was going on might have proven prejudicial. But what's difficult about that is that this is a judge trial, and judges pride themselves on only considering the evidence and not being swayed by emotion. And so it seemed that what was happening was almost like a metaphor, Mark. It was like silencing Freddie Gray to prevent his voice from coming in the courtroom was like silencing Freddie Gray's community, which already has good reason to believe that it's very difficult to find justice in our court system.
I mean, it seems like Judge Williams in these cases have, at least the things he's allowed in and not allowed in the courtroom are fairly balanced from either side, right?
Yes, I think overall, I think Judge Williams has made fair rulings in most of the situations, but he is now the jury and not only the judge. So it puts him in a situation where the rulings he makes will affect the evidence that comes into the courtroom. And I think listening to Brandon Ross's testimony was very moving because it really explained, or you could see the pictures of the officers and what they were doing. But the charge of reckless endangerment, of being aware that you were placing Freddie Gray in a potentially dangerous situation where serious physical injury or death could occur, would have come more to life, in my opinion, had the judge allowed the audio version to enter.
So what did the defense do in cross-examination with Ross?
Well, what they try to do with Ross is to sort of both limit the impact of what happened there, to make it appear that that there was a basis for the officers acting as they did, and also to try to explain Brandon Ross in a way that did not highlight the potential impact of what he had to offer.
So I mean, it's interesting. So we just say that Ross is also, I mean, he testified he was led away in handcuffs because he's in jail awaiting trial on an assault.
That, I don't have any information on that.
Yeah, I was reading that in The Sun. So he's,
What's awkward about this is that you have the one of the prosecution's main witnesses testifying for the prosecution, and I think he's doing it as much for Freddie Gray as he is for the state of Maryland.
So today, the Friday trial. Just give us the kind of rundown. What happened? What happened today?
Well, what happens on Friday is that the prosecution presents an expert witness, because one of the big issues here, I mean, the question that has not been answered, of course, is what did Freddie Gray do to deserve the treatment that occurred after the police chased him and apprehended him? And it's not clear at all, except that it's apparent that Freddie Gray was not committing any crime, was not involved in any criminal activity, and yet our Supreme Court of the United States has held that the police may justify holding someone in detention for a brief period if that person is in a high crime area, does something that's unprovoked, like run after looking in the police's direction, and that would justify the police apprehending on the basis that there's reasonable suspicion to believe that he was engaged in criminal activity. Then once they stopped Freddie Gray, and they didn't stop him. Apparently, Freddie Gray stopped himself, and he gave himself up, and there was nothing left to do there. That's where the police immediately placed him on the ground,
right,
and handcuffed his arms behind his back.
Friday, the prosecution's witness was Neil Franklin, former police major both in the city and state police departments, who now is the head of the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. So what did Neil testify to?
Well, so he has 40 years of law enforcement experience, or maybe 35.
Whatever.
He did training, and so he has the ability to give his opinion about whether or not the police acted as the reasonable police officer would do, based upon not only the law, but also on what the police commissioner's directives tell police that they should be doing. And in Mr. Franklin's opinion, Officer Nero did not act reasonably, nor did his fellow officer, because by handcuffing him and by placing him under custody and under arrest before they have engaged in any kind of an inquiry to find out, you know, why were you running, or what's going on, or who are you, or any of the questions, or by checking with the other officers to find out why was Lieutenant Rice running after Freddie Gray from the get-go. So without that preliminary investigation, once you place somebody in handcuffs and they're on the ground and they're in your custody, you can only do that if you have probable cause to arrest, or if you're in fear of danger for your own safety, for officers' safety, you can do a pat down of the outer clothing. the officers apparently did not do that either. So expert witness Franklin was saying that based upon both Supreme Court law and on the Baltimore City Police Commissioner's directives, which tell police officers how they should act, that this officer on trial, Officer Nero, was not acting reasonably.
So did the defense cross-examine him before the day was out?
Yes, that was the last thing that happened on Friday afternoon, and it went past the 5 o'clock hour. And what they were trying to show is that under certain circumstances, officers have the discretion to make certain decisions, such as placing handcuffs on somebody who had just attempted to flee. And even though that episode seemed to be over, the defense was able to suggest that there were other scenarios that make the commissioner's directives something that's not an absolute. And so that's what defense does. I mean, really what we're talking about here, Mark, is we had a look today, on Friday, about Baltimore policing that takes place in the community where Freddie Gray lived. And that type of policing is much different than what would take place in Roland Park.
So just to conclude, I think that this, no matter how Officer Nero's trial comes out in the end, these trials very much are about how we police.
Yeah, it's really about how we police. And I believe that one of the messages that the prosecution is trying to deliver is to tell the police officers there are too many bad arrests. There are too many arrests being made without probable cause. I mean, only one out of three people who are arrested in our city are found guilty. That leaves two out of three people arrested face the consequences of arrest, including incarceration. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think the message that State's Attorney Mosby is attempting to deliver is arrest people when you have probable cause, and if you blatantly or arrest in violation of law, you may be held accountable criminally.
So what comes next? Monday,
well,
Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah.
Should be over by the middle of the week, right?
It should be, although it's going much more slowly than I would have expected without a jury present. It's not as crisp and as fluid. There's still a lot of bench conferences, which sometimes are not warranted, in my opinion. And so I would expect that the prosecution case would conclude by the end of Monday. That's what they suggested during their opening, and that Tuesday and perhaps Wednesday, but certainly Tuesday would be the defense case, and maybe we'll have closing arguments on Wednesday and a verdict later in the day.
Wow. Doug, thanks so much. I really appreciate you stopping by.
It's been my pleasure as always, Mark.
And we'll continue talking to Doug Colbert during the course of this trial and the other trials coming up to stay on top of this. And Doug Colbert and Dwight Pettit both join us on a regular basis to talk about these trials. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.